So this well-dressed gentleman here, his name is Gil Fronstall, and he'll be accompanying us today. We had decided that all three of us would dress up, but somehow I missed that it was today. And the irony of it is, I'm in the middle of a Zen retreat, a shishin, you know, a meditation intensive, and I'm wearing my robes all the time, you know. And what we were saying was, well, come in your chaplaincy outfit, you know. For those of you who don't know, like in the Zen tradition, we have like a miniature robe that we wear pretty much during formal things, like a sitting. We wear it all the time. And then, ironically, I didn't bring it. I always think of, well, this is a different event. So. Okay, thank you. it just requires the parami of today is virya, you know, effort. So it just requires some effort to see this rakusu. It's about this size, and it's black, and it comes over the neck, and it hangs here. So each time you look in this direction, you can visualize. So we'll start sitting, and then effort. You know, often virya, effort, sati, and samadhi. Effort, mindfulness, and concentration, it's usually translated, they're clustered together as the components of cultivation of consciousness, what in a broad way we would call meditation. And then as you start to sit, you can think the effort, the intentional engagement of sitting, you know? And it's a very interesting way to tune in. Like, what's the mental effort of awareness? What's the effort of experiencing the body? Is there a directing of attention? Is there a receptive attention? What's the effort of opening up the senses? Hearing what's there to be heard? Seeing sensations in the body? To what degree is it determined effort in contrast to effortless effort? Does attention go to the sound? Or let the sound come here? Does effort breathe the breath? Or follow the breath? In a moment, I'll ring the bell. And see, can you notice kind of the shift in your effort? As you shift to attending to what's being said and to thinking. And being aware of the people around you. So can you notice how that efforting comes into place, comes into play? So good morning again. For those of you who weren't here when I said it before we sat, today's parami is vriya, usually translated as effort, persistence, energy. And Gil has translated as strength, but I'll let him talk about that. And then we can ask ourselves, you know, well, what is the effort of awareness? What is the effort of coming into a hospital room where a patient is lying in a bed and being available for whatever they need? You know, what is the effort of being of service? Yeah. What is the effort of being with your emotions? Huh? Sometimes as a chaplain, there's a kind of a decision or an inquiry to make, like, well, how much emotion should I show, you know? I mean, if I show all my emotions, am I sort of inhibiting or crowding out the patient's opportunity to emote? Am I influencing their expression of who they are? Yeah. What is the effort of discernment? And then what is the effort of, if you think, oh, well, I should, you know, suppress my my sadness. No? And sometimes that's quite appropriate. You know, maybe what's going on in your life is made you overly sensitive about something. And maybe it just wouldn't be appropriate in that moment to express the fullness of your emotion. So in a way, this notion of efforting runs through our activities, runs through expressing who we are and how we are. It's brought into the interaction with others. No? There's a kind of energy that's created when we relate to someone else. Yeah? If you're having an argument with someone, it's a heated energy. And the content of the disagreement can be it and infuse it with more energy. Yeah. And then in our sitting, you know, just involved in our singular process, sometimes it can become lethargic or kind of dull. And then how do we energize? So in a way we could say, well, practice, mindfulness is asking us to track, to stay aware of what's arising and respond appropriately, you know? And that intentionality, that responding, has a kind of an energy to it. And as I was saying, sometimes it's about restraint, you know? We restrain from emoting all that's going on for us. Or when we're sitting, we refrain from just following that thought that arose with some energy. You know, it has a significance that draws our attention, away from the simplicity of awareness. And then, how do we not get engrossed and carried away by that thought, by that train of thinking? Yeah. The energy of that. And then sometimes energy is called, you know, effort, persistence. Yeah. Like one of the things we learn, a very basic thing we learn in meditation is persistence, you know? When the mind wanders, which almost always it does, bring it back. This notion of restraint from getting carried away by thoughts. And we can see there's an interplay between intention and energy. Yeah. This often often the energy that's arising for us intensifies our state of consciousness. Yeah. Like if you think of enthusiasm, when you get enthused about something, your energy rises, you know. Attending to it is not a chore. Attending to it has a kind of sparkle. Yeah. And in some ways we could say that meditation is, the exploration of meditation is discovering how, you know, usually our enthusiasm arises in relationship to how much we like what it is, you know, what's happening or what's being experienced. You know? Like if you're reading a book that you're really enjoying, like picking it up and reading it is like more like a thrill than a chore. And if you're reading a book that's been prescribed for the chaplaincy course that you don't like, that you find kind of dry, it's like, ah, then the persistence, enthusiasm, you know? And how we can think of them both as a kind of an energetic equation. And then can we see that fundamentally in our practice of awareness that same energy can be engaged, and it's not defined by like or dislike. Like as we pay attention to an experience, there's an energy that's evoked through the attention and the engagement. Yeah. And this has, you know, as we explore the process of meditation, this is part of what we're exploring. Yeah. And then there's a kind of equivalent in being of service. Yeah. When we're being of service as a chaplain, we're not like, I only talk to the patients I like. The patients I don't like, I ignore them, you know. No, it's we're being of service. And that's beyond our preferences. And then the patient will be whoever they will be. They will manifest their being. And we're not there to judge. We're there to accompany. We're there to bear witness. We're there to support. So that's a particular kind of energy that goes beyond what we think the person should do or what we would prefer if they were doing. Yeah. And as we do that, as we bring that kind of effort, that kind of energy to the situation, it enlivens it. Yeah. Sometimes we can help someone hear themselves just by deep listening. You just put your energy into deeply listening. It's like magic. You know? People can feel that we're genuinely paying full attention to them. And it stimulates their energy. It creates its own kind of enthusiasm for them bearing witness to their own being. And this is one of the great gifts of having a practice and discovering these kind of subtle ways of engaging. Yeah. As a chaplain, you learn how to be receptive. You learn the appropriateness of putting your energy into engaging. Yeah. And we learn persistence.
Yeah.
We had a speaker who would come every year, Tom Harshman, and wonderful person, and very experienced chaplain, decades and decades. And one of the things he likes to say is, one of the gifts we offer as a chaplain is, we're one of the few people the person can order out of the room. You know, you can't order the doctors out of the room, you can't order the nurses, you can't even order the orderlies out of the room. But the chaplain, you can. You know? And then, does our energy resist that? Is our energy deflated by that? Or is there kind of a way in which our generosity, our giving, our being of service can hold that? Huh? It's a very interesting thing to attend to, your energy. Yeah. Sometimes when we're involved in something, when my son was young, and actually I still see some of it in him, when he didn't like to study something, he could not focus on it. And then if he switched to something he really liked, he could focus on it with like laser accuracy. And then we're discovering, working with consciousness, we're discovering as practitioners, how do you bring energy? How do you bring attention? How do you bring openness? How do you bring generosity? Not simply based on what you like and what you don't like, but based on virtue.
Yeah.
Based on this vow to be a person of service.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Oh.
So can you hear me okay? So in a variety of wonderful ways, Paul talked about, you know, the effort, the certain kind of monitoring of oneself to track the effort we're making. And in one very simple kind of simplistic formula coming from the Buddhist tradition about the kind of effort to be made is first, don't make it worse. Second, if you're making it worse, stop. Third, make it better. If you're making it better, keep doing it. And so there's all kinds of levels in which we can track that. It can be interpersonally, and it can be personally in ourselves. Or what are we doing? Is it making it worse or making it better out here? And I think of the effort that a chaplain makes. That my approach to being a chaplain, being a caregiver, being a teacher, is to keep 50% of my attention with the person I'm with and 50% with myself. And that's very approximate. I have no idea if I really do that, but that's kind of the guideline. It's because, and if I really do that well, then I'm very attentive to the thoughts I have, the feelings I have, the impulses I have, the body situation that's going on for me. And it gets really delightful because I'm aware of all those things, but I kind of disappear in the process. And this idea of being self-aware in this kind of careful way and disappearing, it's just a pleasure. And then I'm also, the other 50% is I'm aware of what the other person's doing. You know, what they're saying, what's going on for them, being attuned to them. And because I'm tracking myself, I can also track my reactivity that's going on, my judgments and, you know, things might be going on. But I'm not so invested in them in this kind of being really present. I can see it. And I'm also available to some deeper intuition about what's happening and taking it in and being receptive and hearing receptivity both to myself and to the other. That works really well, I find. This kind of 50-50. And so learning to monitor ourselves is part of this, and the effort, part of the effort is to be self-aware. So I would like to do an exercise that will set us up for more things today. And that is to do another meditation practice. And briefly. And it's a simple mindfulness practice to monitor yourself. And then I'll add a certain twist to it at some point. That is what I would like to kind of emphasize here. So take a posture that is comfortable for you. Comfortable for you to be alert. And a classic way of giving some simple meditation practice would be focus on your breathing. And if your mind wanders off, the distraction comes in, then come back to your breathing. An alternative would be spend some time right now being distracted. Just being yourself with whatever your mind is doing. And notice how are you actually? Not turning away from yourself by focusing on breathing, but just now, just in a global way, checking in. How are you? And how are you about how you are? As you track how you are you happy about this, fine with it? Are you troubled by it? Are you for and against it? Are you judging this exercise? Like, oh, this is ridiculous, just being myself. And knowing it. So how are you with this? How are you with yourself? Are you making it worse? Are you making it better? In how you're aware. And now to direct the attention, to explore this in a different way, is bring your attention to some place in your body that's pretty neutral, maybe a hand. Feeling your hand. If you bring your attention to one of your hands, the sensations of the hands might become more evident than they were before. Sensations on the back of the hand, the palm of the hand, the fingers, fingertips, there may be more sensations in some fingers than other fingers. You might feel temperature, warmth and coolness. Tingling and pressure, vibration. There might be aches, discomfort, or pleasures in the hand. The sensations of your hand that reveal themselves might change over time, moving around the hand, different things show itself to you, or your mind naturally roams around the hand, just taking in the different sensations. And now, become aware of how you're attending to the hand. Are you being aware aggressively, straining to feel the hand? Are you doing it reluctantly or complacently? Or are you avoiding it? Are you being aware with judgments, ideas about the hand? Or with interest and receptivity? Are you more up in the head, the control tower, thinking and watching the hand? Or is there receptivity to the hand more in the hand itself? Any reactivity inside of you about how this is going for you, what you like and don't like, preferences. How are you in being aware of the hand? There's being aware of the hand, and then there's how you're aware of it. What can you learn about how you're aware of your hand? Are there ways of being aware of the hand that are better and ways that are worse? And are there simple adjustments you can make for how you're aware of the hand that are a little bit better for you? Okay, so you can now take a deep breath or two to end this exercise. And you can then open your eyes. And then I want to ask some of you, ask all of you, what was the difference between being aware of the hand and being aware of how you were aware of the hand? What was, in the beginning, what was the difference between checking in with yourself how you actually were and how it was with you, how you were reacting to how you were? How were you about how you were? So this kind of second level, stepping back further to kind of not only be monitoring what's happening for you, but how it, how you're aware of it, how you are about how you are. So any comments about that? Anything you discovered or saw? If you don't mind. Thank you.
I've run into this a fair amount, not just with this activity, but in other care situations where I don't want my reaction. So there's resistance to whatever judgment or feelings might be arise. There's like, oh man, that shouldn't be there. Like some friction at times. Uh-huh. And just noticing that and then being a little more gentle with it when it does arise.
So in this meditation we just did that kind of response come about something?
A little. I went rather my hand to my posture because it's something I'm working on a lot, not doing this and being attentive for years now. And so I'll focus on the back and be like, oh, look, you're doing it again. And so.
So you, it wasn't just a simple awareness of your posture. It was, you came along with agendas and ideas of how it should be. And it was, you know, it's kind of complicated there.
Yeah.
And when the question, can you make a switch from making it a little bit, you know, in the better side, the worst side of how to be, did that change anything for you?
Yeah, that little Aikido is just a little more lightness around it. Or I guess you'd say mental Aikido.
Great, a little bit of lightness counts for a lot. So, someone else.
When I was working on, the metacognition of being aware of how I was aware, I felt like it was very tricky to do that without judgment, like to purity of observation, and in reference to what you said earlier about how you felt like you are disappearing, I thought, oh no, I'm appearing more because I'm observing more. And I wasn't sure whether the lesson was pure awareness was the skillful direction or whether the metacognition and learning to do that without like adding on was the skillful way.
So what if, you know, that's great you see all this. What if making it better is the only criteria for doing that you use is to be more relaxed? What would happen? What do you think would happen to you then? The how, the metacognition, let's make sure that's relaxed.
I need to practice that. I think it was much easier for me to relax in just the first layer, but the second layer, I felt like a sense of tenseness. I think it's from a practice standpoint, and I can sense that the more I practice, the more I can relax into it.
Because that metacognition that is able to be present in a relaxed way somehow, to discover that for yourself, that's kind of what we're trying to offer others. Where we're not coming with our agendas, wanting, we're actually kind of spacious, open, relaxed. So to learn to do that for ourselves is actually a powerful way than to learn to do it for others. In fact, you probably need to do both together. Because if you're bringing a lot of attention to someone, but there's strain and desires and agendas part of it, and you don't know it, then you could do harm. But if you have this ability to monitor yourself and say, oh, the way I'm being attentive to this person is, you know, kind of off. And the way I'm attentive to myself is maybe not quite, you know, it's making it worse rather than better. And one of the, and rather than, so you don't make it worse and worse and worse, I think the simple idea of being relaxed, letting go of the strain, letting go of the tension that's involved in how we're aware is a powerful thing to learn.
I find it difficult to follow the letting go mandate.
The what?
Well, like to tell myself to let go because it makes me grab harder. Uh-huh. It's like, oh no, I'm not letting go. I can't let go. And then it becomes about that. Yeah. But I wanted to share, this was really helpful because I noticed how I make it worse. I laughed when you said that because I it's like, oh, I'm making it worse. Like that moment when you recognize you're doing that, and then how you do it to yourself. And I noticed when I was sitting, I'm a little cold, but I know that I'm not dangerously cold, so I'm a little edgy. And then the noise outside, it started really bothering me, and I started going, it started getting, I can't stand it. I can't stand that noise. It has to stop. And I thought, okay, how am I being aware of the noise? And I thought, I'm just out of control. It gave me the option to go, isn't that funny how I'm making it worse? You know, by saying I just can't stand it. You know, I can stand the cold. I'd already decided to stand the cold. But I hadn't yet made the decision to stand the noise, kind of. I mean, not that it's really voluntary, but then as soon as I decided, I said, oh, that's funny. I'm like, I can't stand the noise. I can't stand the noise. All of a sudden, it just popped, and it became what it was like a drill, and it just popped my rigidity, and it just blew up. And then I was like, ha, it's gone. It the drill sound, like, was the drill that, like, busted through the rock of my reaction to it, if that makes sense. It was really funny.
And so this popping of your tension, could that have happened if you hadn't had this self-awareness of it all?
No, that's what I'm saying is I don't think so, because I had to go, okay, look how you're making this worse. Right. Like, watch how you're aware of this. Uh-huh. And that was like that shift gave me the pivot that was able to see it from a different frame.
Great.
And then to say, oh, I'm making it worse. And then the other thing happened. I didn't decide to make that image happen. It just occurred to me, but it wouldn't have been available otherwise. And it released it. But again, I let go of it, but I didn't let go of it because I said, let go, relax. You know what I mean? I didn't say it because of those mandates that I do that I let go or that I relax. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Very good. So I hope this gives you enough. I hope you all have some reference point for this now, because you're going to do another exercise that's building on this. but it's a chaplaincy exercise. You're going to be a chaplain for someone. And so hearing that, what just happened to you? Delight, fear, curiosity, what happened to you? Just hearing that, you're going to be a chaplain now. Just again, always checking in. What's happening? And then now that you see what's happening, then what? What do you do with that information? Get into it better? Whatever. So, to check in. So now, find another person to sit with. But do all this in silence, please. So find another person just to sit, kind of. You're each going to be each other's chaplain. So just kind of sit in a way that seems appropriate to have a chaplaincy visit with each other. And I think there might be an odd number. And I wonder if, Paul, would you be willing to do this? Because no one's going to talk to each other, so it's just an exercise. Let's see, can you just pair up, please?
As long as nobody talks.
So you're the chaplain, and you've come into to sit with someone. And so attention is needed. Attention to the person you're with. Some kind of attention that hopefully is not going to make them uncomfortable, like staring them in the eye, probably. You don't even know the person yet. So some kind of being present with someone. So taking in the other person a bit. Curious about how are you going to be a chaplain for this person? What's the need? What's the situation? And now, check in with yourself. You might close your eyes even for a moment, and just to check in. And what's happening in you right now? What feelings have come up? What concerns? What body sensations? And how are you with how you are at this moment? Knowing what's happening inside of you, how do you hold that? How do you be aware of that? Is there some way that you can be aware of yourself without a strain? Some meta-awareness, meta-cognition of yourself that is open, receptive to yourself, as if you were a good chaplain for yourself. Oh, this is how it is. Maybe it's difficult. This is how it is. Maybe it's confusing. Oh, this is how it is. Maybe this is delightful. That's how it is. You're allowed to be how you are. And given that, how can you be with it that avoids making it worse, making things worse, and how can you be with it that makes it better? An undramatic better, just a little bit more. So, in a moment, the person you were here with in the hospital wakes up, and now you can reestablish your awareness of them and open your eyes. And now, be aware of the other person. Take them in, be present for them. Some way that seems appropriate in the moment. Remembering this may be as a stranger. You don't know much about them. So how would you just kind of, and what's it like for you to be present? Might there be a relaxed presence to yourself, how you are, that allows you to have a relaxed attention to the other person, available for whatever is going to come, but not insisting on anything or needing anything, just available, attentively. As if non-assertive attention is all the person needs. As if non-anxious attention is all the person needs from you. And then close your eyes again. And while you're being busy being a chaplain, the other person was chaplaining you. What was it like to be on the receiving end of their attention? Open your eyes and be attentive, aware of the other person again. And while you're doing it, also be aware, also recognize that they're being aware of you. It's a mutual thing going on. And perhaps the person you're visiting is not able to speak. And it's time for you as chaplain to leave. So just non-verbally express some appreciation or something that is appropriate to end. And then you can come back to your seat in the circle here. So what did you learn about effort and attending? Anything came was interesting for you that came up in that exercise? Is it on? There should be a light on it. Push the button for the light.
All right. Yes. So I think for me what came up was kind of a cyclical exchange of almost a feeling of, well, for me it was kind of heart to heart. And then because I carry my tension in my lower back, it went to my lower back, released my buttocks, and then shot back over to her. It was kind of this cycle of exchange of almost light.
Nice.
Or flow or something. So yeah, that's what it felt like.
And how were you in all that? What effect did it have on you?
Enjoying, actually.
Enjoying, huh?
Yeah, it felt great. It felt warming and loving and generous, abundant, very good.
Great, thank you. So why don't you, by the way, choose a direction to pass the mic, and with the assumption that if someone gets the mic, they're actually more likely to speak than if they're just waiting for something. You're also welcome to pass the mic, but the assumption is that it might be easier for some of you to speak if you get the mic this way. So just choose a direction.
Sorry. It was really sweet to have a really intentional moment in the beginning to tune into the other person. I think sometimes when I'm caring for people, there's an urgency in the room, and I don't actually spend the time to tune in. I will also say, though, it felt a little bit awkward to me in that when I'm trying to care for someone usually, like, just the position we were in was pretty different than what I'm used to. And, like, I wouldn't face someone, like, right in front of me. That might feel often, like, too intimate for someone I'm just meeting. And I found I wasn't quite sure what to do with my eyes, because usually I'm, you know, sensing and we're speaking and we're using other body language. And so, yeah, I felt myself a little bit caught up in the ways this was different and a little more challenging than some of my other caring moments.
So then in paying attention to yourself, you were aware of yourself being caught up. How were you with that being caught upness?
Okay. Like, trying to let go of it a little bit, but then finding myself caught up with it again.
What's the second one?
Then finding myself caught up with it again.
So was there any understanding of how to step back and hold your reactivity in a spacious way, in a relaxed way?
Medium.
Medium. Great. Yeah. So, but that's fine. I just want to try to convey to all of you that this possible to step back and be aware of how you are, and how you're aware of it, can be really important. And sometimes we're aware of ourselves, but we have no idea that actually that we're being very critical of ourselves, or we're believing it, or we're participating in the reactivity. But there's a way of just being aware of it spaciously, openly, that it can be the step forward to make the whole situation better, even if you're angry. Great, that's all.
I learned a couple things about my body. I want to say I'm grateful that we got to do it more than once, the practice.
Hold it a little closer.
Because the first time, I felt myself move out of my body by about 6 inches or so. You know, just try to get closer. And then I also learned how strongly I use my eyes. So, and then I wondered, oh my gosh, is this like just too intimidating that I'm using my eyes all the time? So I would scan the rest of her body still using my eyes. And then when I would come back, then we would come back into ourselves and sit, and I was so grateful to be back in my body, you know, like back those 6 inches. And I went, oh gosh, I really like it here. and then again, when I would come forward as chaplain, I didn't leave my body that way. I really stayed more comfortable within myself. And puzzled about being with that many minutes with somebody non-verbally, like, oh gosh, what? So, overall, it was a very nurturing process for me.
So. Great, thank you. That's great.
I forgot about being a chaplain. What I remember was just being a friend, and usually that's when I go see someone, I'm always entering the room not really thinking about what's going to happen. So it was more just being there and just wait for something to arise. I mean, if someone reaches out, then I would respond based on what I feel they need. With Clarence, because we Zoomed last night, so I have inside information. Normally, I wouldn't know a lot about the individual that I was with, so I knew that he probably had a late night. So I'm sorry, I'm sharing your that he might be tired. So, and I was just feeling, you're tired, I'm tired too. So just relax. We're just going to hang out here for a little bit and kind of have your voice in the background. When you say, open your eyes, we both open our eyes, kind of look at each other and then realize that we're both tired, then close our eyes. So it was, I noticed that when I don't have an agenda, I'm relaxed. I get more out of it. I think sometimes mental fatigue is a good thing because there's not a lot of mental activity, trying to figure out what's going on, how I'm feeling, how are they feeling, what should I do. It's nice when that's not a lot of agenda or effort. There is an effort, but it's underneath that. So that's how I feel. I mean,
And how was it to receive Clarence's attention?
I noticed there's attention. There is attention, there is care, but again, it was not forceful. It was just a nice, safe distance. And I know if I need it, he will offer it. And I think it's the same way.
Oh, great. So it sounds like you were both attuned to, you feel like you were attuned to Clarence and he had attuned to you, and it felt like a safe place for you to come forward with something you needed if you needed it.
Yeah.
And you were available to him if he needed something to come, but you weren't like knocking on his door and saying, you know, tell me your deepest secrets.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel that's the way a lot, I mean, humans, we have ways of communicating without communicating. Even if it's a stranger, I think it's, if I have that intention, they will understand. Yeah, so I just leave it as, have faith in that. Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I was balancing the tension between like I don't think I want to use the word tension, but I was balancing between ease and tension, because sitting face to face with Casey initially, I was like, I need to put an extra effort into like making sure that I don't seem tired. and then remembering that Casey is also chaplaining me, I'm like, oh, okay, I could actually be tired in this moment. And so there was a relief in that ease. Yeah. But I kept going back to like, oh, I really just want to like go back to bed right now.
Thank you. So maybe the last one. Thank you, Sri.
Yeah, for me, a little bit slightly different in the sense, you know, Alan is my buddy on the study program anyway, so fairly relaxed in terms of how I was looking at him. To the prompts, I was initially thinking, maybe I should look at his eyes. Then I said, okay, now that'll be sort of, if I was the chaplain and I was looking at the patient, that might be a little intimidating or aggressive. So I said, okay, soften the gaze. And, you know, that made things much better, in my opinion, at least for me. So I could relax. And my approach was that let me be there without any agenda. I'm not trying to seek out any information. If he wants to kind of convey something, let him do that. But I'm not going to push the buttons to kind of let him say that his situation is, what the situation is. So I think once I let go of not having to look deep into his eyes and try to kind of seek out information, I'm here for you. If you need anything, let me know kind of attitude, right? So I think that made me much more comfortable. Yeah. And there was no tension after that.
So you made this very nice shift and you felt much more comfortable not having an agenda. And as you were aware of yourself, did little agendas start showing up on the edges, or were you able to keep it safe from agendas?
I did not have any agenda as such, but you know, I was just kind of making sure that occasionally I could glance and see if there was anything he was trying to convey, just being aware a little bit more, but not trying to be piercing look into his.
So there was no little anxiety arose? Maybe,
I did not feel any anxiety because, you know.
What is Alan thinking here? And
I think it's probably, I'm just kind of speculating at this point, is that, okay, you know, I'm trying to be more relaxed. He's my friend. So I'm here for him. So that's my attitude. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. And that's we're going to stop now for a break. But so this was the beginning, I think, of a exploration of how to be present with someone that begins taking into account the different layers of what's happening in the situation, and how we can monitor ourselves, monitor the other person, in order to have a kind of a good quality attention, attentiveness, presence with someone that has a chance we could build on this to have a deeper relationship or a supportive one or be available for what's needed here in a good way. And part of chaplaincy training is to learn how to track yourself, learn how to be aware of these layers and what happens in you and be really aware of how you're being with someone, how you're attending, how you're aware. And is that awareness being informed by the anxiety you have or by the agenda? Like, I need to be able to give someone something to this person. You know, what am I supposed to do here? And you can feel the tension coming up. So to really, the self-monitoring is 50% of the work, I'd like to suggest. And so then we'll take a break. And you can continue your self-monitoring over the break if you want. Or we call it mindfulness. And so we'll start in here in 15 minutes, 10:45. And so thank you and enjoy your break.
Could we have some more here?